right, our next speakers are Hunter Dunlap and Roderick Sharp. Their presentation is on the digital archiving of concert performances, an open source solution. Their biography here. Hunter Dunlap, professor and information systems librarian at Western Illinois University, earned his MLIS at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro and has served at Western Illinois University Libraries since 1997. He writes and speaks on application technologies for libraries and is the author of the book Open Source Database-Driven Web Development, A Guide for Information Professionals, available via Chandos Press, Oxford. Roderick Sharp studied at the Royal Academy of Music in London and has master's degrees in music and librarianship. For the past 10 years, he has been the music librarian at Western Illinois University and is the author of Maestros in America via Scarecrow Press, 2008. He was thrust into church music scholarship when a 17th century manuscript of Anglican service music was sent to WIU by an anonymous donor. Any of you out there? So please welcome Hunter and Roderick. Thank you.
Thank you so much and good morning. I'm the Roderick side of this, and I'm going to just give you a little background to this project. I guarantee it gets more interesting later on. So Western Illinois University began archiving recordings of the School of Music concerts and recitals in 1977. They began with copies on cassette tapes, and then since 1999, we were using CDs. And so this includes all guest artist recitals, choral and orchestral ensemble concerts, and faculty and graduate recitals have been recorded on a Pro Tools HD system in the school's COFAC recital hall. So reconsideration of our archiving system in 2011 was prompted by a number of factors. These included doubts expressed by our dean as to the reliability of CDs as an archival media. But it was important that we were being seen as being up to date with streaming technology. And certainly for me, the most important thing was improving access to this valuable collection. Do I open this up, Hunt?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry about that. Until the fall of 2013, all recorded performances were burned onto CD. We made two copies. One was kept at the music library and available for checkout, and the other one was housed in the archive unit. And the programs for each recital were filed in ring binders. You can see them there on top of the cabinet. The current semester recordings we kept on reserve, and then we transferred them to so that they were limited access for the first semester while they were mostly being asked for by the performers. And then we transferred them to regular circulation the following semester. CDs were stored in cabinets, as you can see, and were kept in chronological order, the only access to a particular recital being by date. Usage of the collection was essentially confined to, in the short term, to performers wanting to know how I did in my recital, and occasionally we would get requests from alumni or emeriti wanting recordings from 10, 20 years ago, whatever, because they'd been reminded of something or other. Anyway, but it seemed to me that a valuable resource of performances and repertoire was being underutilized. The remedy was to provide cataloging and online access. So we decided to go with a new system. The project was a major undertaking and required support and enthusiasm of several constituencies within the institution, the School of Music, university libraries, and university technology. And the first thing I needed to do was to find out how much support we had for doing this with the constituency. Such feedback as we got tended to be positive. The administrators involved gave the project the go-ahead, as did the professor whose responsibility it is to record the recitals. The chair of the music department was eager that the archive be preserved by the most secure means. There was support from the Dean of Libraries, always anxious that the library be seen at the cutting edge of technology. I think that's a common trait of administrators these days. The music library was particularly keen to maximize easy and convenient access to this collection. However, at this stage, we had not fully, really analyzed the situation. For example, one of our archivists was agreeable to having the sound files saved on their server space, but they had no interest in providing streaming access to it. Once the decision was endorsed to go ahead, the first task was to survey colleagues at similar institutions to learn what they were doing. And of course, one of the major access to our colleagues is through the MLA listserv. And I sent a letter to them asking for what they were doing. Responses ranged from comprehensive streaming to plans for introducing various elements of such systems over time. For example, one school was saving all its sound files to a campus server, giving access to students to download their performances, but they were planning for a complete digital commons repository eventually. The development and track record of the variation system developed at Indiana University, I'm sure most of you are familiar with that, attracted our attention. It appeared to be the most developed and sophisticated of the available systems. We carefully examined the feasibility of adopting it because it's open source and freely available. But Hunt will talk about this a little more later, but after careful consideration, we decided it wasn't going to work for us for a number of reasons. So we were supposed to get going with this, but our first attempt was a bit of a dud. It floundered because of pressure of other projects in the computer department. We also couldn't get the extra space we needed. And so it was kind of a wasted year. But then a couple of things happened. The project was endorsed by the Library Technology Advisory Group, and we're from Illinois, so you guys probably know we're having a few financial problems there. So owing to the state funding cutbacks, there was spare capacity in the cataloging department to contemplate doing this major project. So we decided to go ahead and fully catalog the recitals and try and display a link to the sound files in the online catalog, and you'll see that in a moment. And at this point, I'm going to hand over to Hunt because he came to the rescue and got the project underway.
Hello. Great. I wanted to stand down here so I could refer to this screenshots a little bit. So at the outset, we had several project goals. As Rod explained, we had a whole series of CDs and performances that we needed to do something with. And we had several goals that we wanted to achieve. One was to actually make these searchable and streamable. We wanted to make them accessible via the web. We needed to rip over 1,400 CDs, convert them to appropriate formats and formats for preservation. And we, of course, identified MP3 as our streaming format. And we ended up going with FLAC for our preservation format just because of the safe space-saving capabilities there without losing any bits because of the lossless feature. We wanted to scan all of the original recital programs. And we needed to restrict them to campus use only because of potential copyright issues. And then in our university library format context, we needed to integrate our library catalog with this brand new database archive. So as things were cataloged, we also wanted to have links to our streaming web server so that we could easily link both the descriptive cataloging and the streaming music. So we have a library technology committee group in our library, and we went through several iterations of ideas and possibilities as we were trying to formulate a way forward. We did have budget challenges. We really were not able to buy brand new servers or other options, and we had to rely on our campus infrastructure, and we were able to leverage a virtual private server which we had acquired that gave us a LAMP platform to work from. The Variations music project out of Indiana University proved to be really useful for us. Although we did not actually use Variations, Rod discovered a fantastic review of that product. A group of librarians from Baylor University, Towers, Bollock, and Shelley, in Notes, the MLA journal, came forth with a wonderful overview of Variations, which gave us all of the, and it was their implementation, a description of their implementation at Baylor, of their implementation of the Indiana University open source software Variations. Wonderful overview. It detailed the implementation costs, the server specifications, really detailed information, which helped us both figure out whether that product would work for us, but also introduced us into kind of the realm of what kind of issues are we going to encounter as we begin this process of digitizing this information. So this became very important for us. So our team group came together, and we, after going through studying, investigating the Variations project and this wonderful review, we came to several decisions. One is to really to go forward, to do this, and to begin cataloging the recitals, and that would engage our cataloging unit in our main library. And so they began actually fully descriptive cataloging all of these recitals and concerts going back to the 1970s. We then began simultaneously to explore installing Variations on our virtual server. It was some of its specifications, it just wouldn't work on our local campus infrastructure, so we looked to that. And then we also, at the same time, we already had this server, so we, in a Drupal installation, Drupal is a content management system, a database for organizing digital objects, streaming files, PDFs, that kind of thing. And so we looked to see if we could indeed just leverage that instead of going the Variations route. Variations is a wonderful piece of software, but it includes a lot of pedagogical tools that we didn't necessarily need for this project. So we tried to look at both simultaneously, and then, just to give you a sense, we purchased via rental a virtual private server from a host, which has the LAMP stack, it's called, the Linux operating system, Apache web server, the MySQL database, and PHP. We could have tried to install Variations on this server or go with the Drupal approach, which relies primarily on MySQL and PHP. We decided to go with Drupal, as it turns out. It was going to be very complicated to install Variations in our context, might require some more money to buy additional IP addresses for certain streaming functions. Made sense just to go with Drupal in our context for what we wanted to achieve. The next step was trying to tie it all together. We've got a library catalog that's cataloging all of this information, and then we've got a separate database with all of the streaming files. So we needed a common key, a unique identification number, and in our context, we went with the library catalog's bibliographic ID number, and that became our core unique key that we used to tie everything together. So the PDFs that we scanned of our original recital programs, that has that number embedded in the file name. Each folder that contains all of our files, our MP3s, our FLAC files, those have that same number, so that ties everything together. And then finally, we had to create a PURL. We wanted this to be a permanent URL that would be reliable, and that's embedded in the library catalog, which links directly to the corresponding piece in the database archive. And so we began the process of establishing, of grabbing the bib ID, and we used the Voyager Ex Libris library catalog system in our library, and so this is actually a bib catalog file. We grab the bib ID, plug it into our Perl generation system, which we developed, and it outputs a Perl, which we then embed in the holding record of the catalog, which then it displays in the OPAC, so you just click a link and you go to the file. This was automated using AutoHotkey, which is a macro generation system. So you can do, if you have a lot of redundant keystrokes, you can code that in, and then just a couple of F1 or F2 keys, a couple of keystrokes can take 2 to 3 minutes of work down to like 15 seconds, and it can quickly move between a web interface and a client piece of software. So very useful. And that's on some of the handouts that I gave. I have a list of all of the open source and free software that we used in this project, and that's one of the key pieces. The next part was just identifying the major formats that we have available that we were going to be working with. And the Pro Tools software that they record the recitals on, frequently they were exported in AIFF format. We found as we began working with the CDs that our software was ripping it in WAV. And then as I mentioned, we needed to have a streaming format, MP3, but we also needed to have a more compressed format for our preservation side because of storage space concerns. And so we actually compressed the waves into FLAC. Our software that we used to do a bunch of this was FUBAR 2000. It's, again, an open source free software package that's used by a lot of audio converters, as I came to understand. And then the FLAC encoder and the LAME encoder for the MP3s were used to make the conversion. So as the CD's ripped, it goes to WAV, then we would, kind of in an auxiliary manner, do the MP3 and the FLAC, which can then be uncompressed into a WAV if one wanted to go that way. Using the FUBAR 2000 software, when we rip a CD, there really wasn't anything attached to the actual tracks. There's no title information, there's nothing available, except the only really valuable piece of data was the duration. So we grabbed that, and then we, using FUBAR's outstanding tagging capabilities, which batch tags, you can do really quick batch tagging, we could assign an artist name, assign a brief title, the date, give a generic comment, including that bib ID, that unique identifier, the performance date, some copyright information or rights information. And then using Ditto, which again is a clipboard manager, you could quickly just cut and paste things in the Windows clipboard directly into this profile. So it's very quick work to actually tag a series of tracks using this method. And then here's the final output with a fully tagged track. A simple right-click converts it to a FLAC file and to MP3 files. Takes just a few moments. And then we would upload all of our files into discrete folders on our preservation, our local server. So we stored all of, for archival preservation purposes, stored all those locally, both the FLAC and the MP3 and the PDF program. Scan the program. And then began the process of uploading this information to Drupal, to our content management system. And again, we would apply the bibliographic ID number, our unique ID, add that to a string which would connect it to the OPAC, give a short, brief stub title and the performance date, upload the program to the system, and upload each MP3 file to the system, and then leave this for later. The contents note would be filled in by the catalogers. Then finally, this is uploading the files to Drupal, just a simple couple of clicks. And again, the tracks after the PDF. And then this is the end result. We've got a very brief title, our PDF program, a link to the OPAC, a performance date, a contents note, which is still waiting for cataloging, and then the tracks, which are clickable to stream. So we send all of this to the catalogers, and actually they would actually use our Drupal system. They would go to this catalog entry online, and they would catalog it with the actual streaming file quite frequently. And they would then assign the author title, publication info, the contents, which would they would listen to each track and compare it to the official recital program and make sure they align correctly. Sometimes they have to pull Rod into that process because sometimes a group might play something out of order or whatever. And so there's sometimes some pieces to correct. Subject tracings were assigned, and then the link back to the catalog was back to the Drupal archive was available. Then it comes back to systems. After it's been fully cataloged, we cut, copy and paste the author title and contents notes from the catalog and put that in directly into Drupal. And then we have the finished product. We've got the full official catalog title, author program, PDF, the full contents notes, and all of the tracks, which are fully tagged and ready to stream online and protected through our authentication system just to our local campus user group. This is an example of the listing, a search, and then just playing the file.
Well, digitizing the CDs was our major project, but we also wanted to devise a system for the current recitals. We're not keeping CD copies anymore. So this is just a quick, this is the workflow that I'm responsible for. There's a performance in our recital hall. It generates a program and a recording. We keep two paper copies of the program. We still file them. And also, we make a PDF copy of the program, which we add to the recording in AIFF format. And then we check the tracking. I'll talk about that a little bit more in a moment. We create what we call the stub catalog record, which includes the bib ID, which is the key to keeping everything together. We create and add the permanent URL, and then we FTP the file to Information Systems, which is Hunt, and then he does pretty much the process that you've already seen. So here's a typical program, and you'd see that you'd expect there to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 tracks. And this is the sound file that we get from the recording, and you'll see there's 8 tracks there, and we've also added the program. And again, this is, you've seen this before, but we add the Perl, and we've already created the bib record. So part of the work has already been done. And what's good about this is that I can FTP that program to Hunt and his guys, and they can put that on the web within hours. And so if students want to listen to how they did, then it's there for them really quickly. But it's still not been fully cataloged. So, you know, maybe they knew that the track 2 was the Beethoven Sonata first movement. At least they can listen to it, although the process is not yet complete. Here's the catalog record that you've seen with the contents note. And here's the database version with the content note added, which makes it then much easier. They can actually, as you can see, they can click on the actual program. They can see the original program, but also from the contents note, they can figure out what's on each track. Then the other thing we're doing now is that we are digitizing the cassette tapes. Which, as you know, or you could, most of you, I'm sure, who've done any of this, is a much more time-consuming project because you have to run the tapes in real time. So we already have the program in the ring binders. We digitize the performance. we have to create the tracking. This is the hard part, because we have to figure out where's the end of the movement and where's the new piece and all that. And that takes some time and a little bit of skill figuring that out sometimes. Student workers do a lot of this, but occasionally I have to come in and try and figure out, are there two movements? Is there an attacker, or what's going on? Why don't the tracks match? And then we do export that and send it off to Hunt to do the rest of the process.
Quickly, just kind of an overview of our costs. We were able to use existing campus infrastructure, use available desktop computers we already have, and our reliance on free and open source software really minimized our costs. We really did not have to put out a lot of money to do this. Our one major outlay was for the virtual private server, but we already actually had it. We had already purchased it for other projects, so we just had to buy a little bit more storage. But we got a three-year term for only $1,600, which is pretty good purchase, with unlimited traffic and 200 gigs. We're with about 15, 16 years of data, we've approached the 100 gigabyte limit of our MP3 files. So we still have about 100 gigs left in terms of available space. In terms of personnel, 10 people were involved. Initially, the recording studio manager and the creator of each program. Rod and his specialist, I have a main specialist, and then four catalogers who were constantly churning out these cataloging records. We get ahead of them a little bit, but they're very active and they're catching up, and we've been very fortunate to have a real dedicated group of people who are interested in this project. In terms of overall output, the first year, we began in February 2013, we had 869 CDs that were converted, representing over 19,000 objects. The next year, as we began to work through the CDs, we finished up with 481. And then this year so far, we've really finished all of our CDs back to 1998, 99. And so we have just not as many to do anymore. We're down just to the live performances that are happening each semester, and then the cassettes that we're beginning to go back sequentially and retrospectively address those. So overall, we've converted almost 1,500 items. And overall, including the FLAC files, over 400 gigabytes of data has been processed. Finally, in terms of how this has been the reception of this project, the first year, we only had 2,000 page views and a little under 2,000 visitors. It really shot up last year to 15,000 page views and 10,000 unique visits. We're about halfway through the year, so we're on track for reaching the 2014 level, and that's probably our plateau, probably where we'll be for the foreseeable future for our population. But we feel like it's been a worthwhile project to get that much enthusiasm and people actually going to this site and using it. I think as word has spread, it's gone up.
So for the benefit of this presentation, I thought I'd get some feedback from faculty, because there was a little reluctance on the part of some people to adopt this new system, but you can see most of the comments that we got back were pretty positive. Most people have gotten the hang of it really quickly, find it very useful. They can access it from home and so on. I just want to say just a little bit about the copyright aspects of this. I know you guys are very keen on this kind of issue, which is very thorny. To quote from a recent article by Eric Harbison, who I believe is here. I don't know if he's in this session, but I believe he's at the conference. He gave a presentation in 2012 to the IFLA in Helsinki, and he wrote, "The legal ability of colleges and universities to use these institutionally produced sound recordings is the subject of much uncertainty." I'll say. At WIU, along with most other institutions of higher learning, we feel justified in archiving these performances through a combination of our licensing, our performance licenses, the work for hire doctrine, and the fair use test. We do require guests to sign a recording release form before the recitals are archived. At WI, we've certainly done our best to make a good faith effort to cover our bases through consulting with the institution's attorney, reading the statutes and relevant articles, consulting the various licensing agreements, and observing what others have done in this regard. With regard to rights and access, the new system doesn't do anything differently from the way things were done in the CD environment. In other words, the access and so on is the same, it's just different technology. Of course, this new system does make it a lot easier to access and listen to the recordings. Off-campus access is restricted to WIU, our affiliated patrons. It's not out there on the web. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Have time for questions, anybody? Yes.
It's a really great project, and thank you for sharing. I had just a kind of minor question. I noticed in your workflows, as you were explaining it, that for current recitals that are being recorded and processed, AIFF files are still being used. And I just wondered if there kind of what the rationale was, and if there was a way to kind of skip a step and record to wave and then keep moving. And I figured there had to be a story there, so I'm just kind of curious.
There is a story there, and the story is that our recording Power Tool Studio is on a computer in the recital hall, in the sound audio room, and there's a reluctance to plug it into the internet, and fearing whatever is out there, wanted to make sure that is a secure environment for their work, and so for whatever reason, AIFF is the format, the preferred format that once it is exported to a flash drive, because it can't be FTP'd anywhere, it is then walked down the sidewalk to another building where it's plugged in and we go from there. But that's the format that they actually prefer to export in, and so we go from there. We're going to end up converting all this stuff anyway, typically, and it's a couple of mouse clicks, but it's a good question. Why not just go there?
Are you making CD copies for performers?
If they ask for it, yes.
So if they ask for it, yes.
Yes.
And one thing that makes that easy now is that we've got the files in a folder, and it's really would be a really quick turn around to burn it onto a CD from there.
Other questions?
Just really basically, how much of this information is going to end up being accessible after the presentation, like on the ARSC website, or if I can maybe contact you directly?
Yes, the plan is, and usually happens very quickly, is that all of the audio is being recorded and captured. Leah Beale is doing video capture of whatever sessions, and then we also, all of the PowerPoints will be available, so there will be a section on the conference website, on the ARSC website, that will give you MP3s of the audio and PowerPoints or whatever of whatever handout, whatever PowerPoints there are, and then whatever video, that's kind of a nebulous thing, but as far as that. And Patrick Feaster is the one who's in charge, and so if you see him, he very much wants to have whatever presentations you have immediately, and so he will load them up as soon as he gets them.
And also, if you'll leave your business card or your email address, we'll send you stuff as well. I'll put together a packet of things.
A All right. Thank you very much.